to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, with you for an hour of crime. Two famous shows coming up. Later on, we'll hear Calling All Cars, the forerunner to many police dramas of radio's yesteryear. But right now, it's Gangbusters, probably among the most familiar. From March 23, 1946, this is an ABC broadcast called The Case of Joe McCann and the West Side Syndicate.
And now, in cooperation with police and federal law enforcement departments throughout the United States, the only national program that brings you authentic police case histories. Waterman's Pens and Waterman's Inc. present Gangbusters.
Tonight, the case of Joe McCann and the West Side Syndicate.
They say we ruled an empire of crime in the East.
Robberies, extortions, assaults, escapes.
We even cased Uncle Sam for a cool million
and carried out the job without a hitch.
Yes, tonight's case deals with men who thought they were big timers, but whose bragging and arrogance do not tell of the inevitable climax of capture or death.
Are proud to bring you Gangbusters, presenting facts in the endless war of the police on the underworld. Facts that show the operation of our law enforcement officials in their work of protecting our citizens. Commissioner Louis J. Valentine, on leave as interviewer of Gangbusters and serving in Concord, Japan, at the personal request of General Douglas MacArthur, has asked the Honorable James Shuey Malone, Director of Public Safety, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to narrate by proxy tonight's case. Now, Director Malone, just 6 weeks ago on Lincoln's birthday, the criminal considered public enemy number one was trapped in a Chicago attic after the most intensive manhunt in recent years.
That's right, Don Gardner. And events leading up to this elaborate trap make up one of the most spectacular police files on record.
We'd like to hear about them, Director Malone.
Well, Don, one winter's day some years ago, a heavily built man walked through the fourth floor hall of an apartment house in uptown New York City. He stopped at a door and took a key from his pocket.
Where have you been all day?
Well, like I told you, Aggie, I'm looking for a job. What's the matter with you?
Joe McCann is here.
Well, so?
You didn't tell him to come after everything.
Oh, relax, will you, Aggie?
Ed, you promised me you wouldn't run with McCann anymore. He's no good for you.
Well, let me pick my own friends, will you, Aggie? Where's McCann?
In the bedroom lying down. Ed, please, listen to me.
Now, take it easy, will you? I told you this morning I was going out to get a job.
Well, you've been saying that for weeks.
Well, I got a job.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, Ed, that's wonderful.
Yeah, great.
What kind of a job?
Well, you know in all the railroad stations how they got billboards with those ads on them?
Yeah, I know.
Well, it's not much of a job, but I'm going to put up some ads, bill poster.
Gee, honey, that's swell.
What's so swell about it? All day riding from one railroad station to another posting bills?
Oh, don't worry, Ed. You'll love it, honest.
Maybe. But I'm going in and say hello to McCann.
Ed.
Yeah?
No matter what McCann tells you, keep your job, Ed. Please keep it. Promise me.
After all the trouble I went to get the job, you think I'm crazy? Oh, don't worry, Aggie. I'll fix us a bite to eat, will you?
Okay.
Hey. Hey, McCann.
Where'd you get back?
Not just now. I got the job. I start Monday.
Oh, good, good. Gonna have an assistant for free.
An assistant?
Yeah, me. I'm gonna be your assistant bill poster.
Oh, now look, McCann, there ought to be an easier way.
Nobody ever got to be a millionaire an easier way.
Well, okay, McCann. But I don't like the idea of playing nursemaid to billboards in every railroad station between New York and Washington. That's work.
So what? It's work. We gotta find the best spot to knock off that currency shipment before it gets to the Treasury Department. You think of any better way to case it up?
No, I guess there ain't any.
You said it. Look, I'm starved, Ed. You think Aggie'd rustle up some food?
Yeah, I already told her to.
You tell her about your new job?
Yeah, she's tickled.
You didn't tell her the real reason you took it?
Oh, of course not.
You know, Aggie don't care much for me.
Oh, it's not you, McCann. Aggie just don't go for hot dough. Why, she'd be happy if I'd take a job like this bill posting and stick with it for the rest of my life.
You ought to be careful. Aggie might get ideas that a stretch in Sing Sing would make you honest.
Oh, not Aggie.
She's a woman, ain't she? Remember, Ed, you can never figure a woman.
This train for Philadelphia, Wilmington, Baltimore, Washington at 201, track 3.
Let's smoke a cigarette before we start on our next billboard, huh?
Yeah, it's okay with me, McCann. Well, how about it? Is this Trenton a better spot than the others?
We gotta pass up Trenton, too. Give me a light.
Sure. What's the matter here?
Didn't you see? The Trenton police got a permanent detail right here in the station.
Well, there's never more than two cops. We can handle that.
Yeah, but remember, we gotta go up the stairs, through the station, and out in the street. It'll take time. Too much time.
Okay, you're the boss. But I'll sure be glad when I can throw these posters down a sewer.
Soon, Ed. Soon. I'm going to look over the Baltimore and Washington stations.
Well, that's crazy. Those big stations are rotten with guards.
Maybe. And I'm going to take a look anyway. If you finish up, go on back to New York and I'll meet you Sunday at Aggie's apartment.
Right.
Let's get going on that other poster.
Northbound train for New Brunswick, Elizabeth, Newark, and New York. Now arriving on track 1. Northbound train for New Brunswick, Elizabeth.
And all that stuff you told me was a lie, huh? McCann has been working with you. That bill posting job was just an act. You're just using it to case a job.
Now take it easy, Aggie. What are you cooking there?
You'll find out when you eat it. Ed, you made me a promise.
Now look, Aggie. There's no use trying to make me something I ain't.
No, I guess there isn't.
Now, McCann will be here in a few minutes. Now, be nice to that guy. He's a wonder, Aggie.
You'll get caught, Ed. They'll get you as sure as you're standing there.
Oh, not a chance, Aggie. It's going to be perfect. This is going to be the last job. Millions. I'll be fixed for life. That's McCann. I'll let him in. And don't you pop off in front of him. Hello, McCann.
Hi, Ed. Hello, Aggie. I said, hello, Aggie.
I understand you're going to make $1 million, McCann.
Aggie, cut it, will you?
Go on, Aggie. What were you saying?
I understand you're casing the biggest job ever.
Now, look, McCann.
Shut up, Ed. So Ed told you, did he? Well, he told you right, Aggie.
So it's going to be the biggest thing ever, huh? Millions, so big you'll never have to pull another job.
What about it?
Okay, I'm for it. But only because it's going to be the last job.
Now, look, McCann, she gets an idea. You can't get it out of her head.
Shut up.
What she would have found out anyway.
Okay, Ed, okay. Don't worry about it. I picked out a spot.
Yeah, where?
Washington, D.C.
Washington? Are you nuts? We'll never make it. They got 1 million cops down there.
The way I got it figured, it'll be a pipe.
Yeah?
The train pulls into the Union Station in Washington 5 minutes before 2 in the afternoon.
Broad daylight.
That's right. They unload the dough from the train on a baggage truck. It goes over the bridge, across First Street to the post office. And that's where we get it, at the bridge.
Well, what about the guards?
No guards there. Only the guy that pushes the baggage truck. And then...
Machine gun, huh?
No shooting, Ed, I hope.
No?
Now we can help him. Now... I figure there'd be 5 or 6 big sacks of dough on that baggage truck. We kidnap the guy, make him grab 2, then we take as many as we can manage, load the dough, and then the guy in the car, and we're off.
With Mike at the wheel.
That's right.
When?
Lincoln's birthday. Ought to be nice and quiet. I'll ride down to Washington on a train, meet you right at the bridge. Mike will be in a car parked on First Street. When you see me get off the train, then...
Right on time, McCann. Everything's set.
Perfect. Come on. They got the dough loaded.
Mike's got the car in a great spot. It's just a few feet from the bridge here.
Good. And here comes our baggage truck.
Ah, you had all the angles figured, McCann. Look at those sacks of dough. Hey, wait a minute. There's 2 guys with a dough.
Guard?
Yeah, with a gun.
Gotta switch plans, Ed. We don't kidnap the guy.
But
we don't kidnap the guy.
No?
They walk by us. You crack the guard's skull, I'll take care of the other guy.
Right.
Now watch him.
Okay.
Ready?
I'm all set. Now. He's out.
Hey, what the devil are you
doing? I got this one. Grab the money sacks.
I got two. Yours okay?
Yeah, yeah.
What about the other sack?
Plenty of these. Let's go.
All right. Come on, hurry it up, Mac.
You can slow down, Mike. Well, you got away clean.
Okay, McCann. How much do you think we got?
Stick to your driving, Mike. Count up the score later.
See, Ed, I tell you to be a pipe. Want to make a guess how much we got in these three sacks?
Oh, I don't know. Half million?
2 million at least.
2 million? No kidding.
Watch the road, Mike. Oh, you're dreaming, McCann. There ain't no 2 million.
You say there's only a half a million?
Yeah, a half million. Tops.
Tell you what I'll do, Ed.
What?
Settle with you right now. You take 200,000 for your share of the score.
200,000, huh?
That's right.
You mean I'm guaranteed 200 grand even if my split comes out less?
Yeah, and everything over 200 grand, I keep.
You're pretty sure of yourself, McCann.
Made you an offer?
Say 300,000, I'll think about it.
250 grand.
300.
A quarter million, Ed. Guaranteed.
300 grand.
You heard my price.
Okay, McCann. You got a deal. A quarter of a million.
McCann and his henchmen could hardly wait to settle the outcome of this curious bargain done, for they had no idea of the actual value of the huge shipment of currency they'd stolen. McCann had prepared a special hideout near Brentwood in the eastern section of Washington, D.C. After the robbery, the gang drove directly to the hideout. With shades drawn, they sat down around a heavy table on which mail sacks containing the huge money shipment were piled.
What do you say, McCann? Open them up.
Shut up, Mike. Well, Ed, you can still back out. There's over 2 million there.
I settled for 250 grand. I'll take it.
Hand me the knife, Mike.
Sure, sure.
Well, here goes.
Let me hit this.
Get away, will you?
Look at it. Thousands.
Wait a minute.
What?
Look at it.
Well, I'll be...
Let's see that other sack.
Hurry, McCann.
Get it.
The same.
How about that?
Open the last one.
Right.
You're just like the others.
No, ain't that great,
But it's still going,
isn't it? Yeah, yeah, it's still.
The whole bunch ain't worth a nickel. It's all cut in half, mutilated.
Every bill, right down the middle.
Ain't it worth nothing?
Not without the other half, it ain't. Well, looks like we picked a loser.
Well, you and me, McCann, but not Ed.
What do you mean?
He's got 250 grand coming, guaranteed.
Yeah, McCann, what about that?
You expect me to pay off, Ed?
Well, a deal's a deal.
The deal hinges on how much we got. We got nothing.
I was guaranteed 250 grand.
And?
Well, by rights, I should get it.
By rights, you should get it, yeah. Look, call off the deal, Ed. You get a double share of the next job.
Oh. Okay, the deal's off. Now, what happens now?
Every bill goes down the sewer tonight.
What, McKinney?
Down the sewer, I said. Then we can all go back to New York and figure how we can make up for this bum score.
Post Office Inspector Reed to Captain Barney Dowd, New York Detectives. Bandits who escaped today with $4 million in mutilated money consigned to Treasury Department, Washington, narrowly missed equal amount good currency loaded on same baggage truck. Shipment originated Federal Reserve Bank, New York. Getaway car, dark sedan. Stolen license plates, 38-562. Check all possible suspects, New York gangs.
You see, if you'd listened to me, you wouldn't have had all this. But no, you've got to go
cut
ahead.
Cut it, Aggie. Bad enough missing a $4 million score without you rubbing it in.
Well, this ought to be a lesson to you.
You expecting anyone?
No.
Not McCann's, not.
Cops?
Well, how should I know? I ain't taking chances.
Ed, put away that gun.
Shut up, Aggie. Get over where you won't get hurt. Who is it?
Me, Mike. Open up.
Oh, Mike.
Okay.
Hi.
Come on in. Well?
McCann says he's got the hideout already. You should come over as soon as you can.
Okay.
Well, hello, Mike. You enjoy spending your cut?
Cut it, Aggie.
Can you imagine if Treasury guys cutting good money in half? There ought to be a law.
That's why they cut it in half, on account of guys like you.
Yeah? Just look at them, will you? Look. I saved a couple of them.
Why, you... McCann told you to dump all that stuff in the sewer.
What harm could a few of them do? I can't bend them.
Well, get rid of those bills, Mike.
Oh, yeah.
If McCann catches you with them, he'll skin you alive.
Okay, I'll ditch him.
Now, look, Aggie. McCann's got the old hideout lined up on Academy Avenue. We'll work it like the other time. I'll be going out for food. You call me at that delicatessen at 11:30 every night, like you used to, from a payphone.
Well, you don't think you're hot enough for the cops to tap the phone here.
No, you can't tell. You got the number?
Yeah, it's written down someplace. Ed, you should have stuck to that bill posting job. You should have stuck.
Inspector Reed speaking.
Captain Barney Down, Inspector, New York Police.
Oh, yes, Captain. What can I do for you?
Inspector, I think we have a couple of those mutilated bills from your Union Station robbery.
Hey, where'd they turn up, Captain?
A kid found halves of two $20 bills in an ash can uptown in Washington Heights. And the neighborhood may give us a lead.
Well?
The ash can belongs to a house where a girl named Aggie Morgan has an apartment on the fourth floor.
Who's this Aggie Morgan, Captain?
Well, she's the girlfriend of Ed McNamara. And McNamara is certainly one man who could be in on that kind of job.
Hey, thanks, Captain Dowd. I'll take the next train to New York.
You're not doing yourself any good, Aggie.
I know what I'm doing. Even if I knew where Ed was, I wouldn't tell you coppers.
All right. We might as well take her to headquarters, Inspector.
I haven't seen Ed in weeks.
Who has Ed been palling with lately?
How should I know?
You could help, Ed.
Yeah, how?
If you were to tell us who Ed was with on that Washington train robbery, things might go a lot easier.
You wouldn't kid me, copper.
We'll have to hold you as a material witness.
You mean keep me in jail?
Until we find Ed McNamara. If you told us where he is, you wouldn't have to go.
You mean that?
We do, Aggie.
And things would go easier for Ed?
You have my word.
I'll make a bargain with you, Captain Dowd.
What?
You just let me stay here. The minute Ed walks in, I'll tell him to phone you.
Why, you...
All right, man. Take her to headquarters.
You don't have to push. I can walk by myself.
We won't get much out of her, Captain Dowd.
I'm afraid not, Inspector.
Well, where do we go from here? We're not even sure Ed McNamara was in on the Washington job.
No, but if I know Ed, he sure could have been. I'll have my men do a thorough job on this apartment. Maybe something will turn up to give us a break.
Hey, finish up that drink, Ed. You don't want to stay away from the hideout too long.
I wish I knew how hot we are, McCann.
Well, there's no sense taking chances. Look, Ed, I'm going to run over to Newark.
Yeah?
Yeah, I want to talk to a guy about a couple of payroll jobs to tide us over. Now, you get some food in the joint so we can hold up for a while.
Get it in that delicatessen.
Yeah. They got good stuff. Get enough for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that ought to be plenty. Yeah, it doesn't look like the cops have made us for that Washington job.
Why should they? Those two guys we slugged didn't get a good look at us, and all that phony dough is down the sewer. Hey, how about the license plates?
No, I got them hid under the carpet.
Well, we can't use those plates again, so tomorrow we dump them in the river.
Good. Then there's nothing they can pin on us.
You better get on over to the hideout. Go out for the food later.
Right.
I'll be back from Newark about midnight.
Midnight, huh?
Yeah. Wait up for me. See you at 12.
Inspector Rain.
Captain Down, Inspector.
Oh, yes, Captain. Anything interesting in Aggie's apartment?
Well, among other things, we found a phone number.
Phone number?
A delicatessen on Academy Avenue. It's too far away from Aggie's apartment for her to buy food there, but she may be contacting Ed McNamara through the public phone there.
Good work, Captain.
I'll pick you up in about 10 minutes, Inspector, and we'll see if this pays off. Attention, Manhattan Detective Squads. Ed McNamara spotted entering delicatessen on Academy Avenue after leaving rooming house two doors emergency squads. Prepare for raid. Inside of house will be covered by Captain Dowd's detail.
We wait at the head of the stairs on the second floor, Inspector.
Yeah, that should give us good cover.
We can rush down and get him as he opens his room on the first floor. Get your gun ready.
Yeah. Think McNamara's got that room down there all by himself?
Most likely. The way this bunch operates, they usually split up after a job.
Hey, street door's open.
Put him up, Ed.
Yeah, what?
That's it. Keep him high. Come on, Inspector.
Hey, what's the matter, Kyle?
Get inside your room.
All right, all right.
Frisk him.
I ain't got a gun.
We'll find that out.
Nothing on him, Captain.
See, I told you.
Put the cuffs on him.
Right.
Where's your roommate, Ed?
What roommate? I'm staying here alone. What do you want me for, anyway?
That Washington Mail stick up.
I never even heard of it.
You'll hear plenty about it before we're finished.
Okay, so I'll hear plenty. Now, take me downtown, book me so I can get a night's sleep. It's already midnight.
I guess we'd better take him in, eh, Inspector?
Yeah, I suppose so. Grab your hat, Ed.
I don't need no hat. Let's get out of here.
You're awful anxious to get booked, Ed.
Oh, am I?
Yeah. Why do you want to go to jail so fast?
I told you, I want some sleep.
Well, I think we'll wait around and see who you're expecting.
I ain't expecting anybody.
It's only midnight. We've got lots of time.
Now, take me in, will you?
We're staying a while. Shut the door, will you, Inspector?
Right.
What do you know about that Washington Mail job, Ed?
I said I never even heard of it.
Well, that's a start. Let's all go over and sit down. We'll talk about it. Go ahead.
Hey, wait a minute.
Hmm?
Something's under this carpet.
What is it, Ed?
No, the landlord put it there. It's a piece of tin. Covers a hole in the floor.
Okay. Run over and sit down.
Take it easy.
I'll have a look under the carpet. Well.
What is it, Captain?
District of Columbia license plates.
38-562, the getaway car. Well, that pins it on him.
Well, Ed, might as well talk now. Get your gun ready.
Yeah.
Ed, tell the doors unlocked to come in. Tell him.
Doors unlocked, come in.
What's the idea?
Get him up.
Joe McCann.
Watch him. You won't get me.
That's Joe McCann.
Okay. Cut it. I'm through.
Put the cuffs on him.
Right.
Oh. All right, you two, let's go. You'll have a lot of years to think about the $4 million you didn't get.
All Joe McCann and Ed McNamara got from the $4 million Washington currency robbery done were long terms in a federal penitentiary. While in prison, McCann handpicked a new gang from among his fellow convicts. With him, they were to carry out a new series of spectacular crimes.
And that's next week's case, isn't it, Director Malone?
Yes, Don.
We'll look forward to hearing these inside facts, Director Malone. And thank you for a fine report tonight. Now, Gangbusters Nationwide Clues, broadcast every week as a public service to assist American police in their war against the underworld.
Side of face, very large birthmark, upper left arm,
Scar inside left forearm. Watch for escaped murderer, William Alfred Sawyer.
Wanted by FBI. Indiana armed robbery charge. Frank Delmer Berman. 5 feet 11 and 1/2 inches. 185 pounds. Brown hair, brown eyes. 5 moles on right side of face. 3 moles on left side of face. Tattoos. Anchor, left forearm. Heart, left wrist. Watch for Frank Elmer Berman. Considered dangerous.
These are the clues on the most urgently sought persons in the United States tonight, March 23rd. If you have any information concerning these clues, notify your local police, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, or Gangbusters at once.
Next week, new facts about Joe McCann and the West Side Syndicate. New members handpicked behind prison walls. New daring, new devices, new successes. Until the steady hand of the law moves in to prove again the old truths about the wages of sin.
Listen next week, same time, same station, to this case of Joe McCann and the West Side Syndicate on Gangbusters. And remember, in peace or in war, the American Red Cross never ends its efforts to relieve suffering and pain. So give. Give generously. Gangbusters is a Phillips H. Lord production for Waterman's Pens and Waterman's Inc. This is the American Broadcasting Company.
Gangbusters, on Tuned to Yesterday from March 23rd, 1946 on ABC. You're listening to An Hour of Crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up next, Calling All Cars, one of radio's earliest police dramas, written and directed by one of the most respected men in the business, William N. Robeson. The program was heard on the CBS West Coast Network and only in markets where the sponsor, Rio Grande Gasoline, was sold. In this next episode, a tale of true crime called the May West Jewel Robbery from February 21st, 1934.
All Cars, a presentation of the Rio Grande Oil Company.
Los Angeles Police calling all cars, attention all cars, broadcast 69. A holdup. Suspected crime is 5 feet 10 or 11 inches. Weight about 190 pounds. Escaped in a maroon colored coupe. License number unknown. This suspect held up and robbed Mae West, motion picture actress. More than $15,000, the jewelry in cash. Go get him, boys. That's all. Rolls and clips.
And now we turn the microphone over to Chief James E. Davis of the Los Angeles Police Department, who has a message for you.
Good evening, friends. When I became chief of police, there were several crimes on the police records which had not, I felt, been investigated to the utmost. To run down these crimes, I selected from the force 3 officers, Detective Lieutenants S.S. Stone, W.M. Robinson, and E.Y. Kinette, and appointed them special investigators working directly under my supervision. Among these unsolved cases was the theft of the Mae West jewels. I assigned Robinson and Stone to work on this case, which was, at that time, more than a year old. Although every peace officer in Los Angeles County had worked diligently on this case, nothing had been discovered of any value. Still, I felt that the case could be solved. The quickness and dispatch with which Lieutenants Robinson and Stone brought the case to a successful close speaks more volumes than any words I could utter in praise of them. Tonight's dramatization is based completely on the confidential reports of the investigating officers and the court transcript of the trial of David Friedman. It has also been read and approved by the plaintiff, Miss Mae West. I turn now to Frederick Lindsley, who will tell you of the Mae West jewel robbery. In the latter part of September 1932, Mae West's automobile is damaged in an accident. She is seriously inconvenienced by the lack of a car. And we find her in her apartment on North Rossmore, talking the situation over with her manager, James Timoney.
Well, I'll tell you, Jim, it's a nuisance being without a car right now with this new pitcher starting.
Yeah, you can rent a car.
Yeah, and put your life at the hands of any palooka they send along to drive it.
You could use cabs.
Well, it's just as bad. And anyway, there's never a cab around the studio when you want one. See who it is, will you, Jim?
Sure. Hello. It's West Department. Who? Just a minute, I'll see. Here's a Mr. Brennan in the lobby. Ian?
Oh, that's Dave. Sure. Tell him to come up.
Send him up, please. Hey, who is this guy?
Oh, you heard me speak of Dave Brennan? His wife and I were good friends in the big town.
Oh, yeah. Seems to me I do remember the name.
Well, he looked me up at the studio today. Just driven in town. I told him to come up and see me sometime. Well, Revolver, what's the matter with you? Hey, Jim, this monkey looks hungry. Did you feed him?
Yeah, right on the stroke of seven.
Oh, okay. What is it, fellow? What are you trying to tell me? You know, Jim, the Revolver here, he has more sense than any man I've ever met. Except from you, of course.
Well, thanks for the exception. After all, I'm your manager, and that does require some sense.
Yeah, I guess it does. Well, that must be Dave, Jim. I'll let him in. Oh, Dave. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, man.
Well, I didn't have a minute to talk to you this afternoon. Come on in. Well, tell me, how's Marge?
Fine as silk, man. Wants to be remembered to you and everything.
Oh, gee, that's swell. Oh, Dave, this is Jim Timoney, my manager. I don't think you ever met. Jim, this is Dave Brennan.
How do you do?
Hello, Jim. I'm glad to know you.
Well, sit down, Dave. Have a cigarette?
Thanks. Gold tips, huh? Doing all right, ain't you, man? Little different from the time they closed Pleasure Man over in Jersey, huh?
Oh, I wasn't doing so bad then either.
Yeah, you ring the bell every time, eh? Well, tell me, how's every little thing out here in Hollywood?
Oh, it's okay. I can't complain. Only I'm walking instead of riding these days.
Yeah, what are you talking about, May? You walking? You turned over in a new leaf?
Oh, don't be funny. Oh, that lousy chauffeur of mine wrecked a car the other night, and I fired him. And they're still fixing the car, so I haven't a chauffeur or even a car to put him in.
Gee, that's tough. But say, May, I'd be glad to help you out.
What do you mean?
Well, I'm not doing anything out here, just looking the place over. I'll drive you around.
Oh, no, Dave, I couldn't ask you to do that.
Why not? You're welcome to it.
Oh, Jim, that sounds like the answer to a maiden's prayer.
Well, anyway, the answer to a prayer.
Okay, then I'm your new chauffeur.
Well, Dave, I accept with pleasure.
So Dave Brennan, friend, serves as Miss West's chauffeur. In a few days, he is completely familiar with her daily schedule. Then on September 27th, 1932, as he is driving Timoney and her along Wilshire Boulevard...
Dave... Stop here a minute, will you?
Where's that, May?
The shop at the next corner. I gotta see about a fitting.
Ah, come on, May. Let her go till later. I got an appointment with that chatter writer at the studio. You have a rehearsal.
Oh, now, Jim, it'll only take a minute.
Yeah, I know your minutes. It means a couple of hours.
Listen, you eggs. I'll give you each a dollar for every minute I'm in here, over 10.
That's a bet. Dave, this is the easiest dough you ever made.
Yeah, if you make it.
She comes at last.
Yeah, and look at all the bundles.
Yeah, what did I tell you? Bought the place out.
Oh, there, boys. That wasn't long, was it?
Yeah, not much. Spent 26 minutes in there.
26 minutes? Mm. Boy, you're screwy.
No, man, that's right. 26 minutes.
So you owe us each $16.
Well, it was worth it. I found some of the loveliest lingerie.
Never mind what you found, May. Come on, pay off.
Oh, gee, I can't right now.
Why not?
Well, I haven't got the cash.
Ah, go on. You're a piker.
Oh, on the level. I haven't any change.
Woman, I don't trust you. Let's see your purse.
Oh, here you are.
Gee, $3,000 notes and $400.
Nothing smaller, so I can't pay off.
What's the idea? Toting that fortune around with you, May?
I just got it out of the bank. I'm sending it east. You know, my mother.
Yeah. It isn't safe to carry it around like that.
I'm getting the postal order for it this afternoon.
No, you're not. We got rehearsals all afternoon and all day tomorrow, too.
Oh, I'll have to carry it with me then.
Gee, $3,000 and four seniors.
The next afternoon, Dave Brennan makes a date to meet a friend of his at the corner of 6th and Rampart.
Hello, Dave.
Hello, Ed.
This is a pal of mine. Shake hands with Sammy. He's one of the boys.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. What's on your mind, Dave?
Listen, do you want to make a grand?
What's the job?
Grab Mae West's jewelry and her dough.
Sure, that's worth a grand. How about my pal here?
Oh, I'll cut him in for a grand, too.
Fair enough. How about it, Sammy?
Well, fair enough.
Okay, hop in and I'll take you out to the joint and give you the layout. Well, here we are. There's the apartment house where she lives, see?
Yeah, but it's going to be sort of tough making a getaway from that joint.
Wait a minute. You don't have to knock her over in there. Like I've been telling you, I've been driving her around, see? Now, every night after she leaves the studio, her and Jim Timoney, that's her manager, and me, we all put on the feed bag together, see? And right on the dot of 7, we pull up here, and Timoney goes up and feeds Revolver.
What do you mean? He loads his gas?
No. Revolver's the name of her pet monkey.
Oh, I get it.
Now, look here. I drive her up here at 7 sharp. I'll pull up by that fire plug across the street, see? Nobody will be parked by it. There's sure to be a vacant place there.
Yeah, then what?
You guys be parked right here. When you see Timoney get out of the car and go into the apartment house, you move in, see?
Easy.
Get the rocks and the dough and take it on the lamb. I'll meet you at 11 p.m. at the same place as this afternoon.
That night, as is her custom, Miss West returns to her apartment house at 7 o'clock and requests Timoney to feed the monkey. She waits in the car, intending to go on to the fight. She has been chatting with Brennan about 3 minutes when she notices a man, coat collar turned up around his face, hat pulled low, swaggered across the street toward the car.
Hey, Dave. I don't like the looks of this guy coming across the street.
Who? Oh, him. Just some drunk, I guess.
Oh, maybe. And what's that he's got in his hand?
I don't know. Looks like a handkerchief.
It's a sticker. Hand over the poke.
What?
I said hand over the poke. Come on, give it to me. Now give me the bracelet. Quit stalling.
Oh, don't get in a hurry.
Take your time, buddy. You'll get it.
Oh, there you are.
Now, that necklace. Come on, make it snappy. Good. Now I'll have those rings.
Well, you haven't overlooked anything, have you?
No, I can't think of anything. Can you? Now listen, Mug. Start this car. Keep on going, and don't look back.
Okay.
Hey, Dave, stop.
He said to keep on going.
I don't care what he said. Stop right here. I gotta try to get his number.
All right.
Big Mug.
Yeah, he's liable to turn the heat on you, May. He sounded tough to me.
Oh, he's nothing but a hoodlum.
Well, you see anything?
No, I couldn't get the number. It's a coupe, that's all I made out.
Hey, what's the matter, May? The idea of standing here in the middle of the street. Anything wrong?
Oh, it's plenty wrong. Some mug just turned a rod on me and lifted my jewelry and that dough I was carrying.
Well, come on, let's report this to the police right away.
Hey, listen, May, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, why not?
Well, if you get the bulls on this job, you may never see the rocks again. I tell you, these gunmen are tough monkeys.
Well, what did you propose doing?
Now, listen, you leave this thing to me for a few days, will you?
Why, what could you do about it?
Well, I had some connections back east. Might do some good out here. Let me look up some guys, and maybe I can get the stuff back for you.
Well, what do you say, Jim?
If you think you can reclaim the stuff, go to it, Dave.
4 hours later, Dave does reclaim the stuff for himself.
Well, boys, that was one of the neatest jobs I ever saw pulled. Nothing messy, you know. Clean from start to finish.
Thanks, Dave. Here's the stuff.
Let me see. Swell.
Wait a minute. What about our cut?
No, I'll pay you off in a couple of days.
Yeah, well, why not now? You got 3 grand notes there.
Hey, you don't want to try to change a $1,000 bill with every bull in town looking for them the way they may be tomorrow, do you?
Well, no.
Now, I'm trying to stall May from reporting it to the cops, but she might jump out of line. Now, you fellas just leave this all to me, and I'll pay you guys off day after tomorrow.
Okay, Dave. Say, Dave.
What?
Hadn't you better return the ice?
Why?
Look, Dave, those rocks are her business. She looks like a good dame to me. We got a grand apiece of her dough. Ain't that enough?
Yeah, but there might be another 10 grand in sparklers here. Say, you don't expect me to turn that back, do you?
Look, Dave, it's none of my business. I done the job for you, and you're going to pay me off. What you do with the rocks is your own business. But if I was you, I'd turn them back. Geez, the dame's going to make a pitcher soon, and she's going to need them.
Yeah? Well, maybe you're right.
Sure I am, Dave. Give them back to her.
Okay, pal. I will.
The next morning, Timoney and Miss West are discussing the robbery in her apartment when the phone rings.
I'll answer it, May. Hello.
I want to talk to Miss West.
Who's speaking? This is her manager.
Well, you'll do. It's about that holdup last night.
Oh, yeah. Get a load of this, May. Well, what about it?
The first.
Fine. What is it?
Well, you go down Rossmore from the apartment to Rosewood Avenue.
Yeah?
Then you turn to the right.
Yeah?
Well, in the middle of the block is a white garage. And behind the garage is a pile of lumber. And under the lumber, you'll find the purse.
Well, that's fine. Where is this Rosewood Avenue? Stranger here in Los Angeles, you know.
It ain't far from your apartment. Next block, down Rossmore.
What's that? I'm a little deaf.
I said the next block, down Rossmore, from your apartment.
Yeah, I see. And yeah, you said something about a garage.
Yeah, I said the purse is behind the white garage in the middle of the block, under a pile of lumber there.
Yeah, well, thanks. Who is this speaking?
Say, Mutt, do you think I'm nuts? I'm doing you a favor as it is, telling you where you can find that purse.
Yeah, I know, but I'd like to... Hello? Hello? You hung up on me. You get that, May?
Oh, most of it. What's the idea of all the stupid questions and that crack about being deaf?
Yeah, just stalling him so I could remember his voice if I ever got a chance to hear it again.
Oh, smart boy, Jim. You ought to be a cop. You got the figure for it anyway.
Yeah, that's so.
Well, they left a purse for me, huh?
Yep.
Oh, I wonder if there's anything in it.
Well, let's take a walk over there and find out.
Miss West and Timony follow Friedman's directions and recover the purse under the lumber pile, but it is empty. 2 weeks pass, and Brennan's daily promises to contact the jewel thieves come to naught. Finally, Miss West, advised by friends in New York, contacts Lieutenant F.L. James of the police gangster squad and makes a confidential report of the holdup. James devotes weeks of his time to the case. The sheriff's office and the district attorney's investigators also work on it, but no substantial clue is discovered. Months pass. The May West jewel robbery becomes another unsolved crime. Then, James E. Davis is appointed chief of police. Shortly after taking office, he calls Detective Lieutenant Stone, Robinson, and Kynette into his office for a conference.
Boys, beginning today, you three are to work out of this office as special investigators directly under my supervision. You will be relieved of all routine duties, and I want you to spend all your time on certain cases which haven't been cleared up yet. There are a bunch of robberies that have been hanging fire. For one reason or another, no arrests have been made, and no substantial clues turned up. You know the way I feel about such a state of affairs. I have yet to see the perfect crime. There is no case that can't be solved. It's up to you boys to prove that I'm right. The first case I want you to go to work on is that May West jewel robbery. Go out and get the men that did that job and bring them in here. We'll put them away for a while where they can't bother anyone.
Detectives Stone and Robinson studied the investigation reports of the officers who had originally worked on the case and then planned their criminological strategy.
Well, it's clear from these reports that only two people knew Miss West was carrying that dough around with her.
Yeah, but remember she says here that she thinks maybe somebody spotted the diamonds at the fight.
Ah, that doesn't mean anything. The first thing the stick-up man said was, hand me the poke. The only thing in the purse he wanted was the money.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, two people knew about that money. Timony and Brennan.
And Timony's out. He's been her manager and trusted friend for years.
Right. So that leaves Brennan, who, after all, was only a casual friend. Let's work on that angle.
Holmes, your deduction is astounding.
Elementary, my dear Watson. Elementary.
Well, all right. Let's get a line on this Brennan guy.
Investigation of Brennan's acquaintances limits itself finally to Edward Friedman as the man most closely resembling the general description of height and weight given in Miss West's report. Friedman, having been booked on a previous charge, the police records include his picture and fingerprints. Stone and Robinson take Miss West, the mug of Freeman, for identification.
Well, is this your man, Miss West?
Oh, let me see now. He's sort of dark and handsome, isn't he?
Well, what about it? Is he the guy?
Well, I can't tell for sure. You see, he had his hat pulled down and his coat collar turned up, so his face was pretty well hidden. But if I could hear his voice or see his hands, why, then I'd be sure.
What do you mean, see his hands?
Well, he had short, pudgy hands. That was the one thing about him that impressed me.
Well, we'll run this guy down and let you get a look at his hands.
Robinson set out to run down Friedman, but they are blocked when they discover that he's out of town. A couple of weeks pass, and then an anonymous telephone call informs them that he's returned. For several days, they cruise the neighborhood of 6th and Dunsmuir, where Friedman lived, without spotting his car. Then on Thanksgiving Day, accompanied by their wives to avert suspicion, they once more visit the place. This time, they are successful in locating Friedman's coupe parked on 6th Street. For 2 hours, they wait, parked nearby, and then at last a man comes out of an apartment house and approaches the car. They recognize him from the picture in the mug book as Friedman. As he gets into the coupe, Robinson walks up to the right side and Stone closes in on the left side of the car.
Open that door.
What's the big idea?
We're from the Detective Bureau. Get out.
What's the rap?
We want you for the May West robbery.
It's a bum beef.
Come on, get out of the car.
I'm coming, you big flat foot.
Oh, no, you don't.
You can't. Get away. There.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. I'll go.
Set the braces on him, Bill.
Okay.
All right, let's go.
Stone and Robinson take Friedman to the University Police Station, where they question.
You know Dave Brennan?
No.
We know you do.
Well, so what?
We want that jewelry back.
That lousy jewelry. Brennan promised to return it to May West. If he had, I wouldn't be here now.
What did you get for that job?
All I got was a grand.
And it's hardly worth it, was it, Friedman?
Well, I needed dough. But it was a crying shame to take that dame's rocks.
Well, what are you going to do about it now?
I'll take my rap, and I'll take that double-crossing rat Brennan to the pen with me.
Having obtained Friedman's full confession, Lieutenant Stone calls Miss West and informs her that they have a suspect in custody who has confessed. Miss West asks him to bring the man over to the apartment at once. She and Timoney greet them outside the apartment house.
Miss West, this is Mr. Friedman, the suspect I told you about.
I remember Miss West from the night I held her up.
Oh, yeah. I remember your voice now. This is the man, all right, Lieutenant.
Well, what would you say, Mr. Timoney?
Sounds like him to me, but I'd have to hear his voice on the phone to be sure.
Well, I guess we could arrange that too, Mr. Timoney.
Oh, listen, Lieutenant. I'd like to talk to Mr. Friedman alone. Mind if we get into the car? It's kind of cold standing out here.
Sure, go ahead.
Thanks. Well, look here, pal. Just what was the big idea?
Listen, Miss West, I'm sorry about the whole thing. I really am. If I'd known you were so regular, I never would have agreed to do it.
Well, it's all very nice to hear, but how about them diamonds of mine, huh?
I don't know where they are. I got a grand for the job, and I was through. Brennan took the rocks.
Oh, so Brennan was in on it, eh?
Sure.
Oh, that's the limit. When I call that guy a friend, I guess I'm just a chump.
I made Brennan promise to return the diamonds.
Well, you're good at moving mountains, too.
I wanted to come and tell you about it a lot of times. If I could have gotten the jewels back for you, I would.
Well, you're not a bad guy, Friedman. I don't know, but I feel kind of sorry for you. But that double-crossing Brennan, if I could get my hands on him...
You and me both.
The long arm of the law reaches out for Brennan, and he is arrested in Chicago. Friedman is indicted by the grand jury on December 4th on 2 counts of robbery, the May West job and a prior holdup. On January 24th, 1934, Friedman goes on trial before Judge Harry Sewell. Day after day, the courtroom is packed as May West gives her testimony. On February 2nd, the jury is given its instructions and retires. At 1 a.m. on February 3rd, the jury files back into the still crowded courtroom.
Gentlemen of the jury, have you reached a verdict?
We have, Your Honor.
Read the verdict, please.
We, the members of the jury, find the defendant, Edward Friedman, guilty as charged in the indictment of robbery in the second degree.
Stand back there. Get some water, someone.
Oh, what seems to be the matter, Jim?
Friedman's fainted.
Oh, a tough guy, huh? Just a poor hoodlum. He can dish it out, but he can't take it.
Judge Sewell sentenced Friedman for from 2 years to life in San Quentin Penitentiary. He appealed his case, and the appellate court confirmed the judgment. Stubbornly, he carried his fight to the state Supreme Court, but that august body refused to review his case, and Friedman must serve his time. Dave Brennan, instigator of the plot, was arrested in Chicago, jumped a $10,000 bond, and traveled to Miami, Florida, where he was arrested again. Although Captain Stone traveled all the way to Miami to bring back his man, the governor of Florida ruled that as Brennan was under bond in Illinois, he would have to be extradited from that state. So the fight for extradition goes on. We, the police, have performed our duty and discharged our obligation to Miss West and to society in apprehending these criminals. But how quickly they can be locked behind prison bars is a question that can only be answered by those who manipulate the red tape of the law.
Thank you, Chief Davis.
Los Angeles Police calling all cars, attention all cars. Cancellation of broadcast 69 regarding a holdup. Suspect described in this broadcast is now in custody. That's all. Rosenquist.
This is your narrator, Frederick Lindsley, bidding you good night for the Rio Grande Oil Company.
Calling all cars on Tuned to Yesterday from February 21st, 1934 on the CBS Pacific Network. And that puts a wrap on this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.